Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share she is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal Series, 5 wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and Susan's latest book, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses at the Wise Woman University. But you can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
And green blessings to all of you. Thanks, Justine. It's always so wonderful to hear your voice. Hey, Rebecca, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well. Yes.
It was just a stunningly beautiful day here today. How about where you were?
Very rainy here, but...
So we had blue sky and little white fluffy clouds and sunshine, and now the moon is shining down on us. It is so bright and, just wonderful. Past apprentice and a dear friend came to visit and brought us oysters from Whale Fleet. Oh, my gosh. Mm. Life is rich and good, huh?
Yeah, it's great. That sounds great.
Well, let's see. Last week, as soon as the show started, we had somebody hanging on the line waiting to ask a question. How about this week?
Yes, there's one person waiting to ask a question.
Well, then I guess we should put them all on and hear what their question is.
All right, in the 302 area code.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Oh, my goodness. I have the deepest gratitude for you.
Thank you so much. I'm honored.
I'm a 32-year-old woman, and I've struggled with fertility. I've been trying for 6 years. I have read your books, Down There and The Childbearing Years.
Yes.
And I found a wealth of information, and I thank you.
Oh, I'm so glad that it's useful for you.
I've been rotating with my infusions, stained nettle and red clover blossom and oat straw.
Okay.
And I'm taking 2 to 4 dropperfuls of Vitex daily.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's anything else I can do. Like I said, I've been struggling with this for about 6 years, and it's been a long road. And at one point, I did see a reproductive specialist, and I was diagnosed with low progesterone. And my uterine lining won't convert has been the ongoing problem. And I just wanted to know if there's anything you suggest.
Well, as you probably know, because you read my books, whenever I'm looking at something that I want to change or someone else wants to change, I use the paradigm that I call the 6 steps of healing. And in the 6 steps of healing, which is also known as the 7 medicines, we start with step 0, do nothing. Now, of course, this kind of almost immediately suggests to an American, do nothing is the kind of the same as giving up. And in one sense, that's true. I'm sure that you have heard the stories of women who struggled with their fertility, gave up, adopted a child, and then got pregnant.
Yes, I have.
And they're true stories, and it has to do with the nature of struggle and what happens when we stop struggling. So, in a way, that's a very extreme remedy to tell you, first off, give up, let it go, stop trying to get pregnant, and cast it to the universe and say, it's okay. I could adopt. I could express my creativity in some other way. I can work with children if I want to be around children. There are many ways to achieve goals associated with children without personally having my own biological child. But another aspect of that is a little less extreme, and I think about the woman from a very famous, well-known TV talk show who came out here to kind of interview me to see if they wanted to have me on the show. And she thought that the best way to do it would be to bring her health problem, which was just exactly what you're describing, and pretty much in those words, too. I've really been, you know, struggling, and I want to have a child, and I just, you know, haven't seemed to be able to do it. And one of the first things that I asked her was, how does your partner feel about having a child? And her immediate answer was, oh, he doesn't want a child at all.
In my case, my husband is very supportive and equally wants a child as much as I do. He's on board with the infusions. He's replaced his morning coffee with stinging nettle. And he takes chickweed tincture, and he's very, very supportive and adorable in all of this.
Okay, great. Now, just to leave no stone unturned, we've checked to see that his sperm is viable and mobile, yes?
Yes. I originally started by going to a doctor, and she said, oh, you're 25, you're young, it's probably stress. Go home, and it'll just happen. Couple years later, it still never happened, and we saw this reproductive specialist by recommendation of a family member, and we were a little hesitant, but we did it, and I had progesterone suppositories, and my husband had to give me shots in the bottom, and my breast swelled with pain, and it wasn't helping, it was hurting, and we decided that if that's what it took to have a child, that we wanted no part of that. That's not what we wanted. We didn't want to do that anymore. The artificial hormones were not anything we wanted to do on the long term and at all, really. So, yeah, his sperm was tested. He had high motility, and his sperm count was fine. He did have a spermatocele, and he's taking chickweed tincture for that, although I understand it doesn't really affect the count. And we had the postcoital test done, and it was fine, and everything looked okay. We had an IUI, and my follicle matured. Everything was great, but my lining just never converted, and that was the issue the whole time we saw him. And after about 3 months of the hormones, we looked at each other and said, you know, we're done with this. We can't do this anymore. This is crazy. The only other thing is when I was 24, I had cervical dysplasia, which resulted in me really taking charge of my health and eating whole foods and getting on a path of a more nutritious lifestyle. But I did have the LEAP surgery, and I was curious if maybe the scar tissue from that could be affected in this at all, and maybe if there's something I could take. Like, I was thinking perhaps comfrey infusion, maybe if that could be the problem.
Well, if that was the problem, comfrey could certainly help.
Okay.
I'm also thinking about the Aboriginal people in Australia. And they have a very interesting belief. They say that you can have fertilizing intercourse and not get pregnant if you haven't petitioned the soul of the baby to come and be with you. And that this is, in fact, the most important thing, and that they have special places set aside where they say the souls of the baby are, that baby souls occupy certain particular caves and particular places. And if you wish to get pregnant, that you go to one of those caves and you ask a baby spirit to allow you to be its mom.
That is so interesting and makes me tingle, because in the last 3 months I went to Ireland, and there what they call passage tombs, but I don't think that's a tomb at all, but there's ancient dolmens of where rituals of the pagans occurred, and while inside Newgrange and Noth, I felt this amazing feeling and asked while I was inside this ancient portal. and that's interesting to me. I think that could be totally possible, and I am asking the universe, and I think there might be something to be said for that.
Yes. I'm very moved that it resonates with you in that way, and that you had that experience that you can bring back to mind, and of your working with that. That's very beautiful. Thank you for sharing that with us.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. One other thing that I can think of, and, you know, this is, I probably don't even need to ask you this, since, of course, I do mention it in my books, but I find that the more animal fat in the diet, the easier it is to get pregnant.
I eat eggs every morning. I only use the fat of butter, and I actually use the Icelandic and the Irish butter because it just has so much better butter fat and milk and bad.
It's wonderful.
Oh, okay.
And that's wonderful. That's great.
And I discontinued the canola oils and all of that. Just it doesn't serve me. So.
Yeah.
And I eat meat about twice a week, maybe more if I crave it, especially during my menstrual time. I do crave a lot of red meat during that time.
So the last thing I think that we could do together is to ask ourselves, you've said a couple of times that what the doctor said was that you don't have enough progesterone.
Right. At my luteal phase, it was very, very low, and my uterine lining never converted. So I had a mature follicle. The egg was released, but implantation
but
never
it didn't
occurred.
Find a home in your uterus.
Right.
So one of the medicines after Serenity Medicine is story medicine, and we've been looking at some of the story. And then the next medicine is mind medicine. So the next to the last medicine is pharmaceutical medicine, and that's basically what the doctor said was, oh, okay, you're not making enough progesterone, so we're going to start giving you these hormone shots. But what you noticed was that that's not healthy for your body.
No, it was quite the opposite.
So he might have, like in his mind, an example of what a healthy body would be, and you didn't meet the criteria, but then when he tried to turn you into that normative healthy body, you didn't feel good.
That's correct.
So is there some way that your body would be willing to both make more progesterone, ripen the lining of your uterus, and feel good? Have you asked your body that? Have you had any thoughts or dreams along those lines?
I go into the garden and I ask, you know, and the red clover blossom seems to really be an ally to me right now, although I only drink about 2 quarts a week and rotate that with stinging nettle, which has also made my hair very shiny, and I have a glow now with the nettle, and it's lovely. I also had dark red spotting right before my cycle, and my cycle only lasts about 2 to 3 days. It's very very dark the first day, but then it's very light, and so I don't feel like my cycle is long enough. I do ovulate, and I have great cervical mucus now that I've been drinking the infusions. It's helped tremendously with that. I'm definitely seeing changes in my body for the better, and I attribute that to the infusions and the Vitex.
And you've been, and remind me again how long you've been working with the infusions and the Vitex?
The Vitex I was taking in supplement form and then switched to tincture fresh berry about 3 months ago, and the infusions about 4 months ago. So a relatively short time. And what I understand what you've said in the past is that it could take up to a year to really see the benefits from the infusions.
Yes. Well, some of the benefits are obvious immediately, like you're saying,
right,
hair
yes.
is shinier, you have more energy. But in terms of more set patterns, anything we use is likely to take longer because that pattern is more set. I was really struggling to do something in my voice lesson, and my singing teacher said, remember, it took me 4 years before I finally got my gold pin as a ski instructor because of muscle memory. And once you get something in your muscles, it's very difficult to change it.
Okay.
So I'm kind of hearing you answer my question, but not quite. So let me ask it again and see if I can ask it in a different way.
Okay.
Have you specifically asked your body if there's a way that it would be willing to make more progesterone but still feel healthy and good?
I have asked my body to make the hormones it needs in the cycles that it needs it, and I welcome a soul into my womb when it feels ready, and I hope that soon.
I hear you very much on that, yes. Okay. So far as you know, you're not getting any yes or no about your body's willingness to do this.
No, my body is very open to exploring, and I'm very willing to try anything else, and it seems to be telling me to just stick with the infusions and the Vitex, and that seems to be doing really well. I was just curious if there's
any other infusions
to throw in the mix or any other tinctures. Or
and I think that simpler is better.
Okay.
And I am glad to hear that you're, you know, feeling, you know, overall that working with the infusions is making you feel better. And that's, you know, always one of my goals, is that we may not be able to get what we want or to solve a problem that we are seeing, but at the very least, what we're doing to help us do that should make us ultimately feel healthier.
I agree.
Right, whether we succeed or quote-unquote fail, so long as we've gotten healthier, then there isn't any failure at all.
I agree with that.
I am so moved that you called and that you have shared so intimately with all of us. We really appreciate you.
Oh, love and gratitude. Thank you so much.
Green blessings. Good night.
We have two more people holding to ask a question, so I'm going to open it up to the next caller.
All right.
In the 614 area code, yes, you're on with
me. Yes.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, I love you so much, and it's incredible that the previous caller just spoke so beautifully about her struggles with infertility, because that was the reason I discovered you originally. And I used the wisdom in your books, and it took me a couple of years, but I was able to conceive, and I have two wonderful sons thanks to the incredible blessings in your books. But what intuitively I felt so strongly was
it's like you're her guardian angel calling up to say, hey,
I know, yes. And I got pregnant when I gave up all my temperature charts and gave up all my efforts. And I just said to the universe, I said to the divine, to God, I think I'd make a great mom. I'm ready for a soul to come in. If it's God's will, I'm ready, but I'm not going to take my temperature anymore, and I'm just going to let it go. And the next month, Susan, I was pregnant. So it's very beautiful what you do. It's very sacred work. And I've read all your books, and I've used all your wisdom. But now I'm in a different stage of life. I'm a crone, a happy crone. I'm still working hard as a high school teacher. I'll be doing that for a long time. But I'm having some struggles with my weight, as so many women do. And I was wondering if there's anything I'm missing that would be a fix for that. I'll say that I want to be a vegetarian for reasons of ahimsa, but I'm thinner when I do a little bit of a Mediterranean diet with chicken and fish and a little bit more animal protein. I'm fine with dairy. I do organic dairy, but I don't want to eat animals if I can avoid it. And I'm struggling with that, and I think I just would love to hear what you'd have to say about that. I think I know what you would say, but I'd love to know what you would say about that now.
I would like you to imagine Eleanor Roosevelt.
I love her.
Okay. Now I would like you to imagine Nancy Reagan.
Oh.
Which one of these women is healthy?
Well, I don't know. I would probably say more Eleanor than Nancy, but I don't know. Yeah.
Yes. Eleanor is one. Now, when you look in the mirror, you want to see Nancy, but what you're seeing is Eleanor.
Hmm. Yeah.
Do you remember being 11, 12,
yes,
13? Do you remember when your breasts started to grow and your clothes didn't fit?
Yes.
And while on one hand you were kind of thrilled, on the other hand it was really yucky?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, what mm-hmm. are these things? Oh, my God, they move around when I run. Arg!
Yeah.
You know, suddenly there's like padding on my hips and my butt. What is with this?
Right.
And again, there was certainly that part of me going, ooh, look at this, wow. Now, you know, because my culture was saying, hey, yeah, this is what your body's supposed to look like.
Right.
So that part of me was supported. But now in this transition, when once again your body is changing, your culture still wants you to look like Nancy.
Right. Right.
And you can, but at the cost of your health.
Yeah.
If elected, I would give every postmenopausal woman $1,000 for a new wardrobe.
Right.
Because it is guaranteed to make you feel fat if you're trying to fit 10 extra pounds into the wardrobe you've been wearing all along.
Right.
Give it up. Get some nice new clothes. Because the critical letter between the F and the T is an I, not an A.
Let's see, for me, I was thin all my life and was very healthy. And as I gained the weight after menopause, which, by the way, your book got me through so beautifully and helped me to deal with the hot flashes and all the changes of menopause, but I started to have, higher cholesterol, and I started to have some heart palpitations.
Healthy for menopausal women. High cholesterol equals longevity for women.
I know. It's so against the paradigm of what my doctor thinks.
Then
but
you should
know,
stay away from
I know.
Your doctor.
I try to as much as I possibly can. Oh, it's just so beautiful to hear your voice. I'm such a fan, and I've considered apprenticing with you, although I'm out here in Ohio now, and you're out in beautiful New York State, which is where my grandparents were, and I do love that part of the country. So,
well, the apprentices come and live with me, and they come from all over. I've had apprentices here.
I tell you,
Israel,
I have a fantasy of doing it.
Poland, Australia, New Zealand. Really?
Oh, and I loved that book that you recommended from the wonderful woman who lived by the Red Sea, and it was just such a fantastic story, The Gypsy. Yes, it's so beautiful. But, you know, I just can't thank you enough for your work.
So I'm not sure what you're saying. Are you still fit?
I'm very fit, yes. Mm-hmm. I'm very fit, and, you know,
And I don't care how much you weigh. Is your body mass index over 35?
Oh, no. It's like 26 right now.
Well, you know
it's
what?
Not too bad.
That is a lot healthier and set for more longevity than 25 or 24 or 23.
Oh, you've made me feel so good.
what most postmenopausal women should be looking at is a body mass index of 26, 27, or 28.
And that's where I'm
and
at.
So long,
you know,
as
I'm 5'6", I'm like 148, so I'm not too bad, really.
You're not doing bad at all,
yeah.
So long as that woman is fit and engages
in
some vigorous exercise. And, you know,
mm-hmm. I do my yoga. I have a very good yoga studio. I walk frequently. You know, I am quite fit.
That's what's important. Right.
Well, thank you
now,
so much, and I
you are so welcome. However, I am a voice for the plants, and I simply must tell you that
yes.
there is only one rule on this planet, and that is, in order to stay alive, I must eat life.
Right.
And so I must speak up for the plants here and say, oh, tut-tut, we're going to pretend only animals are living, and that therefore you are allowed to murder and eat plants? Well,
yeah.
you know, so far
yeah.
as I can
okay.
tell, it's all figured.
Okay. Yeah.
As far as I can tell, it's
it
all alive. And yes, indeed,
mm-hmm.
the rule here is if I want to stay alive, I have to eat life. So therefore,
right.
what I can do is I can extend myself out and see to it that the life that I'm going to be consuming has been treated in a loving manner, which to me is more about ahimsa.
Right. Right, right. Oh,
not
yes, it's so good to hear that, yeah.
It's about where
yeah.
my love is. And
right.
if I can reach out with that love and ensure an animal's well-being while it's being raised to make milk and meat for me, then I think that I am exemplifying ahimsa.
Well, and I do only consume, you know, I make sure that any dairy I have is from a beautiful farm where the I know the cows are treated very beautifully, and you know, if I do have some chicken or fish, I know that it's, you know, been given a good life and it's, you know, been farmed responsibly and ethically. So, you know, I do make every effort that anything I do put in my body that, you know, is of animal nature is definitely has been treated well. So, but, you know, still I have a little
hey, so
guilt,
once,
you know.
Once again, I'm smiling a little bit and saying, how interesting that she makes this distinction.
I know.
That the vegetables you put in your body can come from anywhere.
Oh, no, no, I
but
do
gonna,
organic, so I'm going to, you know.
All right, but organic
yeah.
could be 4,000 acres of organic tomatoes in Mexico.
That's right, I know, right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, again, what I'm saying
yeah.
and what I truly believe that this idea that we're talking about here is about the humble understanding understanding that other things give their life to our lives, to
yeah.
nourish and sustain us, and we then, upon our death, put it all back into the cauldron.
Right.
And that
yes,
every
we do.
every breath is a prayer, and everything I eat is a blessing and a
yeah.
celebration. And so if you have any self-blame or self-guilt about what you're eating, I invite you to compost those.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Susan. Well, Maureen Baker here in Ohio says thank you so much for your work, and I appreciate it so much. You are a blessing. Thank you so, so much.
Thanks for calling in and helping us reweave the healing cloak of the ages.
Oh, blessings upon you, dear. Thank you so much for talking to me tonight.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay, another person waiting on here with a question.
Okay.
In the 912 area code.
Hi,
you are
on
me.
Hi, Susan. This is Kim. I had come to visit with you this summer with my baby, Saya.
Yes.
Or, how are you?
I'm just fine. How are you and Saya?
She is just amazing and wonderful.
of course.
I have implemented the infusions and love them and for my whole family and many, many of my friends. And so I am so grateful for those, and I'm so grateful for so much that I learned from you and have taken into my life. I have had a health crisis, though, a couple months ago, and it's made me come to realize I've known this for a while, that I had a chronic illness, but I think I finally realized that it's chronic Lyme. And I wanted to just kind of get your thoughts on that and where to go, because it's really confusing and especially kind of complicated by the fact that breastfeeding, which there's also, discussion over whether that's the right thing to do or not. So that's where I'm at.
Really? Is there some evidence that Lyme can be passed through breast milk?
There is. I don't know how strong it is. I mean, honestly, she was already exposed in utero, which to me seems like such a much more concentrated risk. So to me, the antibodies that she is building in her immune system, you know, towards her immune system from breast milk would help counteract anything that she was exposed to. But, you know, I do worry about seeking out treatment while I'm breastfeeding and the potential of, you know, shedding that in my breast milk.
So when you say chronic Lyme, did you have a Lyme diagnosis previously?
No, I've never had anybody say it to me, which I'm angry about, by the way.
Okay.
Because I've been to every specialist in most of the states in the country, and no one's ever said it to me until an acupuncturist said it to me. And there's a new book out by Dr. Horowitz and, a self-questionnaire, and I score in the very high probability because I've been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, autoimmune, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I right now am waiting on the results back from a Western blot, but I've been told because I've been sick for so long, for 14 years, that it's probably not going to come back. It's going to be hard to test it as far as my blood, if that makes sense to you. I'm on the edge of understanding of all of this. And right now what's scaring me is I'm having a lot of neurological symptoms. Like I can't write emails because I can't figure out how to spell things, and I'm having a lot of like zappy numbness in my face and a lot of cognitive fog, which is making it really hard to care for my two children.
Let's work with skullcap.
Okay.
Scutellaria lateriflora. Skullcap is a real ally of mine. It grows here on my land, out in the swamp. It's a mint, and so it's as safe as any mint for a woman who is lactating. In other words, if you would feel safe eating pesto, then you'd certainly be safe taking skullcap.
Okay.
I prefer to work with skullcap tincture, and I exclusively use tincture made from the fresh skullcap.
Okay.
In some instances, a tincture made from dried plant, if it's a dried berry or a dried seed or a dried root, you get a tincture almost as good from the dried plant part as you will from the fresh plant part, especially with the berries and the seeds, because there's really not much difference between them fresh and dried. However, with plants that we harvest in flower, like skullcap, the difference between fresh and dried is so extreme that I actually say to people, don't buy a tincture made from dried skullcap and expect to get the kind of results that I'm talking to you about.
Okay.
So skullcap, as its name would lead us to think, is the cap of the skull. It is the crown chakra. It is the herb that brings the original message of health to the nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
Skullcap certainly could be used in a water base, but I don't think that it's specific nutrients that skullcap is bringing us. Instead, I think that one of the reasons that we need to use it fresh is that there's a certain kind of energy that skullcap creates. We could get fancy and call it an auric field or an etheric energy, but we don't need to do that. That can literally be transmitted into your nervous system. And so it doesn't take a lot. It's not like nettle where we need to make an infusion. We need to get those, you know, macronutrients from the nettle. With the skullcap, we're working at a much less measurable and more subtle sense, which I think is perfect, given that what we're dealing with is Lyme, which is a rather subtle disease. However, what really makes my heart light up is that Stephen Booner's newest book on herbal antivirals highlights skullcap.
Yep.
Now, the skullcap that I use is Scutellaria lateriflora, side-flowering skullcap, or mad dog skullcap. And the skullcap that Stephen cites as one of the most powerful antivirals in the world is Scutellaria chinensis, this Chinese skullcap. However, he goes on to say that the constituents in the two plants are virtually the same.
Okay.
And
you prefer local
Chinese,
and not exotic.
Yes.
Right.
While the Chinese root of their skullcap to make the tincture that they use as their top antiviral, the constituents, again, are about equivalent in the root and in the growing leaf. So I have always tinctured the skullcap in flower. And I had a very interesting experience with it. I went out with a live-out apprentice, and we harvested skullcap. And it's, you've been here, so you know that the swamp, you know, is about 10, 12 minutes away. And so we walked out there, and then we harvested the skullcap, and we came back. And I made my tincture, and she stayed for a cup of tea, and then she drove home. So it was maybe between the time when we harvested it and the time that she put up her tincture, maybe an hour and a half. And then we compared our tinctures a couple of months later, and there was a noticeable difference. And that little bit of time that she waited, something had left the skullcap. And so I will tell you that for myself personally, what I now do is I take my jar, my scissors, and my vodka to the skullcap. And as soon as I harvest it, I make the tincture. I don't even wait the 12 minutes to get back home. And I'll tell you something even more interesting. The skullcap grows in kind of filtered light in swampy places. And those places can be very mosquito-y. And one day, quite by accident, I was going out to harvest some skullcap, and it clouded over the way it can in the Catskills and began to rain the way it can in the Catskills and to thunder and to lightning. And one of the things I really liked about this was that the mosquitoes went away because they could not fly in this very, very heavy rain. And I just, you know, well, I was so wet, I might as well just go ahead. And I went out, and I sat with the skullcap. And as those thunderstorms do, it soon ended. And I harvested the skullcap. And that was the most incredible skullcap tincture I have ever made. Perhaps it was the ozone in the air from the lightning. Perhaps it was some, again, energy. That the skullcap was able to get from that storm. But it was certainly that kind of, I am just going to set things back into their proper places and get rid of what shouldn't be here. There are two places where I know where you can get tincture of fresh skullcap, especially since we're now into the part of the year when you're not going to be able to harvest it yourself. And that is Red Moon herbs and Catskill Mountain herbs.
Okay.
There's a slight difference between the two, and that is that White Feather, who runs Catskill Mountain herbs, has stayed truer to my teaching because she uses 100-proof vodka to make her tinctures.
Okay.
And Red Moon Herbs, which used to be run and owned by a past apprentice who sold her business to another very like-minded woman over the past short period of time, it's a fairly recent change, They have decided to go with grain alcohol because they can get it organic and because they want to meet certain manufacturing standards. And I have a problem with the high-proof alcohol, and especially with our using that as our primary medicine. They both do lovely work, and they both work with fresh plants.
They do. Okay, great. Okay.
Okay.
Well, it was just wonderful to hear your voice again and to feel I was like, I'm rocking this. I'm feeling so good. And then I just, like, crashed, and I was, like, feeling lost. And you just put me back into a place where I feel like I can own this again, and, you know, I can do this. So
good.
I appreciate it.
And then just one other thing that I picked up from Stephen, and that is astragalus.
You had told me astragalus when I was there anyway. You picked up on that. Yes, you told me. You were like, when you go home, take astragalus.
Yes, if you're including some astragalus infusion in your infusion rotation, that's all to the better for you.
Okay. I can do that. Okay. Thank you, Susan.
You're welcome. Love to your family.
Thank you. You too.
All right, it looks like we're going to move on to an email question.
All righty.
All right. Hello, I am 6 weeks pregnant, and I have been undecided about aborting. I don't want to go to the clinic and abort, but I have heard of blue and black cohosh, but wanting to know a little more. Also want to know if it is effective and how long does it take before I start realizing I'm aborting. Also want to know what to expect while I'm having a miscarriage. Thank you.
I know that there are some listeners who are already very disturbed by this question. And I really understand how disturbing this is. And the disturbance moves through a variety of different levels. For me, my personal belief, my personal opinion, is that the woman has rights which are stronger than the rights of anything in her body. And that the woman has the right to decide who she shares her body with. We can speechify about using birth control and not getting yourself into a position where you might be pregnant and not wanting to be pregnant, but it's pretty silly to do after the fact. Because of this, I have always passionately supported a woman's right to choose. And that means I support women who choose never to abort. Because I have always passionately supported women's right to choose with my own time, my own energy, and my money in an ongoing way, the most disturbing thing to me about this question is the fact that the woman who is asking this question has not made an appointment for a safe and legal abortion. I would not wish for her to have to be a woman in one of the many, many, many countries on this planet where she could not get a safe and legal abortion. I would not wish for her to be a woman in the audience where I was teaching at a conference where the women were being taught how to put sticks through their cervix so that they could abort because they lived in a country where they couldn't abort, where they couldn't get a safe and legal abortion. And my own personal rule is that I won't give information to women about using herbs to abort until that woman has made an appointment at a clinic, which she may then cancel if she wishes to, but this is my standard. If you are serious about your wish not to be the mother of this being at this time, then I insist that you make an appointment for a legal abortion. Because if we don't, then it will be perceived that it's not needed. So you're not only taking away your right to choose, you're taking away lots of other women's right to choose as well. That said, the safest and easiest time to use herbs in this way is 2 weeks before you miss your first period. That is, almost immediately following conception. Similarly, there are safe and effective morning after pills available in the United States for women to use when birth control fails, even if it fails because you didn't use it. That's a failure too. So may I urge you to, even though you're past the point where you could use that now, find out now about these choices so that should you need them in the future, you will know what is available to you and be able to unhesitatingly go and use it. And that's true of herbs and drugs, that they are most effective and safest when used in the few days immediately following the merging of the egg and the sperm. The event of fertilization, and if that can be somehow hindered before it actually implants into the uterus, then basically what we have is a heavy period. And we know that approximately 25% to 35% of all pregnancies do terminate naturally in this way. Once the woman has missed a period, she is considered to be 2 weeks pregnant. The next best time to start using anything to help remove the life from the womb is at approximately 4 weeks of pregnancy, or again in the 2 week period immediately preceding when the second missed menses would be. You say that you are now 6 weeks along, which would mean that you have also missed that window of opportunity. In the first window of opportunity, the drugs, I think, are more than 95% effective, and the herbs are about 85 to 90% effective. In the second window of opportunity, there are no drugs that are used, but a aspiration abortion, safe and legal, is again, you know, well over 99% effective. The herbs, however, their effectiveness falls to about 50%. If you wait yet another month to 10 weeks, you can still get a legal abortion. It will not be as simple. It will not be as safe. It will be as effective. The herbs then would be maybe effective 20% of the time. So in short, what I am saying to you is please, for the sake of yourself and for the sake of all women, don't use herbs as a way to decide whether or not you should be pregnant. Make a decision. Go to a clinic. Take care of yourself before and after with herbs. Drink your nourishing herbal infusions. Make yourself some chicken soup. Make sure loving people are around you. And make the choice that you can live with. Green blessings.
Okay, next question.
I have been contemplating coming to apprentice with you for a while. I am now ready to join you this upcoming summer of 2014. Do you know the dates yet for the Green Goddess Week? Would I be able to apply soon? I could only find information for 2013. Thank you so much.
Well, let me answer you specifically, but generally as well. I offer 4 different ways to apprentice with me. 3 of them are ways in which you live with me for a certain period of time. And the 4th one is a live-out apprenticeship. All apprentices go through the same application procedure. And that is, they send me a $100 non-refundable application fee and a letter and or a drawing telling me what their vision of themselves as my apprentice is and telling me what their goals are. After I get the letter and the application fee, I call the prospective apprentice. And I spend approximately 30 minutes on the telephone with her, doing my best to convince her not to become an apprentice. Doing my best to tell her how hard it will be, how much she will be pushed mentally, physically, psychically, emotionally. I tell her, in fact, that we tell the apprentices that if you don't feel like leaving, I'm not doing my job. If you leave, you're not doing your job. So, the live-out apprentices come 1 weekend a month. April, May, June, they have either July or August off, September, October, and November, and they have a full 2 years to complete their live-out apprenticeship. Simple herbal apprentices come for 2 weeks or more and learn about herbs and nutrition and living in a healthy body. Shamanic herbal apprentices come for a minimum of 6 weeks. We encourage them to stay for 13 weeks or even longer if they possibly can. And they have a variety of extra activities that are part of their program, and they are much more challenged in what they do and how they relate to what is going on. The last live-in opportunity is an opportunity that I created for women who said, well, I can't even get away for 2 weeks. And I said, really? You think I should be able to do an apprenticeship in just 1 week? All right, here it is. And that is the Green Goddess Apprentice Week. It is, in many respects, the hardest of all of my apprenticeships. It is an apprenticeship in which you will be worked for 26 hours a day. There is no slacking off. There is no time for introspection. There is work, 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 work for the entire time. Obviously, I couldn't possibly alone work you that hard, so I have other teachers who are here. So we do it in relay. You don't get a break, but we get a break. It's definitely a challenging program. All of my apprenticeships are quite challenging, in fact. I am always in awe of women who say, yes, I am going to take this risk. I am going to jump into this fire. I'm going to apply for apprenticeship. Once you decide that I haven't been able to talk you out of your apprenticeship, then we continue along the path. You tell me, you know, you've told me your goal, you've told me your vision, so you've probably told me which of the 4 apprenticeships that you are coming for, and I either approve you or not, And if I do approve you, then that approval is good for a two-year period. There have been times where I actually extended that further. I had one young woman who very much wanted to come and apprentice, and the first year she couldn't come because some very close family member died, and she literally had to stay home and take care of that. And then the next year she was all set to come here, and she fell and broke her leg in such a way that she was unable to come. So we extended her right to come and apprentice onto the third year, in which time she did come and apprentice. We had a wonderful time with her, and still speak very, very fondly of her. So apply now is the short answer. You don't need to wait for a date. The Live Out Apprentice Group, as I said, begins in April, usually mid-April, weekend in mid-April. Simple herbal apprentices begin any Tuesday. There are a couple of blackout dates. Shamanic herbal apprentices have five starting dates throughout the year: April, May, June, August, and September, and that is also starting on a Tuesday. And the Green Goddess Week is usually the closest weekend to Lammas in August. So you know for sure that it's going to be during the first 2 weeks of August. This has been a specific answer to your question, but a general response as well. If you want to read more about my apprenticeships, go to wisewomanbookshop.com. And there I have written at length about the apprenticeships. I'm very excited that the Spirit is moving you to contemplate an apprenticeship. And let me tell you what I tell all women who are considering this. Take as long as you want to think about it. Be sure that you're willing to commit. And then, and only then, commit. Once you've committed, I expect you to live through your commitment, even though you will think you've made the wrong choice at least once during your apprenticeship. Rebecca, you apprenticed, yes?
Yes, I did. And so, it was one of the most enriching and proven to be probably the most long-standing thing that I could have done. For myself at a young age. I was young when I came there. I was only 23, I think, so.
Did you ever want to leave?
Oh, yeah. It was really hard. It was so challenging. I mean, it challenged every part of who I was and who I am, and yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so worth it.
And you stayed. You did your part, and I did my part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm still asking for more to learn more from you by being here with you. So it's.
And I so appreciate it, Rebecca. Thank you so much.
All right.
Okay. Do we have more questions tonight?
Yeah, there are a couple people on hold here, so I'm going to open it up to the 248 area code. Are you there?
Hi. Yes. My name is Jean. I have a problem. I have a herniated disc in the lower part of my spine, and I've been having excruciating pain, and the pain radiates from my spine down my right leg. And I wanted to know if that poke stab would help alleviate my pain.
Poke stab would not be the first thing that I would choose in that situation. When I had a pain that was radiating down my leg, what I used was Hypericum perforatum. And that is frequently known as St. John's wort. I call it St. Joan's wort because one of its other excellent uses is to help heal burns. And I figure Joan knows so much more about burns than John does.
Is that something one can buy over the counter, or is it something I have to order from you?
No, you can buy it right over the counter. All right. The tincture must be made from the fresh flowering plant, You cannot get effect from a tincture of dried St. John's wort, hypericum. It must be from the fresh plant. So be sure, if you're going out to a store to buy it, be sure to read the fine print on the back of the label and be certain that it was made from fresh plant material. Also, it is important that you get only St. John's wort and not a tincture that has other material in with it.
Okay. Is there anything else I can use?
Two things you're looking for is that the tincture was made from a fresh plant and that it is not a tincture with a lot of plants mixed together in it, but just the one plant that you want, which is St. John's wort hypericum perforatum.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay.
You want me to call you back after I've had my amazing results?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
And, you know, don't be afraid to use large quantities of the tincture. I knew what to do as soon as I felt the pain, and I actually took a dropper full of tincture every 15 minutes, and the pain was gone in a few hours.
So just rub it into my lower spine?
Yeah, now you're not starting as early on as I did, right? I literally started within, you know, a couple of minutes of feeling the pain. So you might want to take it like, you know, even as a dropper full, even as frequently as every couple of hours while you're awake.
Is it an ointment or is it something that you rub on the body?
No, it is not. It's a tincture that you take internally.
Oh, it's an internal medication.
It's an internal herb.
Okay. So how much should I start off taking, a teaspoon, a half teaspoon, or what?
Generally, a dropper full is considered to be a dose.
Oh,
and you can take,
so get it like an eyedropper and drop it into my mouth or something?
You will buy it in a bottle that has a dropper in it.
Oh, terrific. I didn't know. I was unaware.
That's all right. When you buy the tincture, it will be in a dropper bottle.
Wonderful.
Make sure when you buy it that you read the label and that it's been made from a fresh plant, not a dried plant, only from fresh plant. And make sure when you read the label that it's only St. John's wort and not any other plant.
Okay.
Because many tinctures you might look on the front and it will say St. John's wort, but then on the back there's other herbs mixed in it. If you're talking about a drugstore, you're not going to be able to get a fresh plant tincture. You're going to have to go to some store that sells whole foods and tinctures or order online or through the mail.
Okay. Can I order from you?
Oh, heavens to Betsy, I don't sell any herbs. How could you believe a word I said if I sold herbs?
Okay. Thank you very much. I do have a new Whole Foods store in my area, and I'll call there and see if they have it. They no doubt do.
I bet they do.
Thank you so much for the info.
You're welcome. Green blessings. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, another caller with a question. In the 951 area code?
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, wow. Hi.
Hi. What's your question tonight?
I have a question. It's kind of like way typical for a 57-year-old, but I've always had low blood pressure.
Yeah.
It's getting up there these days. But it's not always high. You know, it's fluctuating rather dramatically, in my opinion. It goes from the 120s up to 158. Systolic. I don't know what the diastolic is, like, actually. But I don't know if you have any suggestions about that. I know diet, exercise. I'm thin. I've always been active. I don't smoke anymore. Not up for the last 25 years. I don't drink. I don't know. I don't exercise that much, but I'm active. I don't know if that makes sense to you. But I'm active.
Yes, it does. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It does. Because people tend to think of exercise as like, you know, lifting weights or, you know, running in place on a machine, and the exercise Doesn't have to be that at all. It can simply be, as you say, being very active in your life, taking the stairs instead of the elevator, parking further away from where you're shopping instead of as near as you possibly can to the door. So there are a few really key and easy things that you can do. And quite a few people have had really incredible success with these things. So the first one is a meditation practice. Do you currently have a meditation practice?
I daydream. I have a daydream period of in the morning every day, but I wouldn't really say it's meditation.
Well, one of the easiest ways to get your blood pressure down is to have a meditation practice. And it doesn't have to be much, even 5 minutes.
Yep.
And I usually suggest that it's done in the evening.
Oh, really? Okay.
Fairly close to when you go to bed, because blood pressure rises as you sleep and then falls up the day, right?
That's right. I have read that somewhere along the line.
So what we want to do is do our meditation shortly before we go to sleep.
Okay.
And that will help moderate and slow down that overnight rise of blood pressure so that you start off at a better place every day.
Hmm. All right.
One of the simplest meditations is to choose a mantra, which is merely a sound that you like, and repeat that. That could be Om.
Hmm.
It could be God.
Mm-hmm.
Or Hail Mary. It can be a prayer that you repeat over and over. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum. Hail Mary, full of grace, blessed art thou among women. And you set aside 5 minutes in the evening, close to your bedtime, and you use sound to focus your mind only on that sound. It's one of the easiest beginning meditations, because beginning meditators say, oh, well, I'm so distracted, this, that, and the other. So we use sound. There's no distraction possible, right? And if you find you have been distracted, you simply go back to your sound or your prayer.
Right. That's very
I don't know if you feel the difference, but your energy has changed dramatically while I've been talking about this.
Yes, I do feel it, yes.
Right, and your blood pressure has gone down.
Very well, could have. It's funny, it's up at the oddest times and down when I think it should be up. But anyhow.
Mm-hmm. So you have a cuff that you have at home?
Yeah, I do. I'm an EMT.
Good, and you've been tracking your blood pressure. People say, well, those cuffs aren't accurate. And I say, we're not looking for accuracy. We're just looking for comparison.
Yeah.
And so long as you're using the same cuff, you can compare, and you can see, you know, are there things that bring it up? Are there things that bring it down? And get some sense of what's going on for you. So item number one, meditation practice with sound, 5 minutes, sometime late in the evening before you go to bed. Mm-hmm. Item number two. Hawthorn, like dandelion, is a very generous herb, makes all of her parts available to us, and can be used in a variety of ways. Hawthorn leaves, hawthorn flowers, and hawthorn berries are all tremendous tonics to the entire cardiovascular system, raising low blood pressure and lowering high blood pressure.
Really?
Not an ACE inhibitor. This is not a diuretic. This is not a calcium channel blocker.
Mm-hmm.
Hawthorn works in a completely unique way to itself to improve the pumping action of the heart, which thus moderates and changes the blood pressure. Generally, hawthorn is used for long periods of time. About 5 or 6 years ago, on my Healthy Life radio show, I was talking about hawthorn. And it was kind of an out-of-the-body experience because I was kind of sitting beside myself, hearing myself talk about Hawthorne and hearing myself say, Hawthorne is for the aging heart. And when I was done with that show, I took myself in hand and said, girl, you are over 60. That is an aging heart there. Listen to yourself and start allying with Hawthorne. And I do want you to know that I take a dropper full of Hawthorne berry tincture, which I make from the dried berries, and I take that almost every night.
What other forms does it come in? I choose not to take alcohol, although I have occasionally sort of, I don't know, it lessens the effectiveness.
Can use Hawthorne leaf and Hawthorne flower and make an infusion of it.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. I will tell you that small amounts of alcohol, and that's what we're talking about with tinctures, a dose of a tincture is 1/40th of an ounce,
mm-hmm.
that alcohol at that level in the diet confers greater health and longevity.
Mm.
I will also tell you that I have worked extremely closely with hundreds of alcoholics,
mm-hmm.
and none of them have ever found that using tinctures in any way triggers their alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
I do always recommend that tinctures be used in liquid,
mm-hmm.
and who's someone who doesn't even want the taste of it in hot liquid or hot tea or even hot coffee.
All right. I have done it.
It's an excellent way to do that. The reason that I'm answering you in such detail is that the other herb is really only going to be usable as a tincture, and that is motherwort.
Oh, motherwort.
And you certainly do not have to use motherwort and hawthorn. Just hawthorn itself would be enough, and if you wanted to use it as an infusion, that would probably do what you're looking for it to do. The leaves and flowers are usually infused. It is the berries that are usually tinctured. For me, it's easier to take hawthorn berry tincture because I travel a lot, and I can just throw my tincture bottle in my travel case and have it with me, whereas I wouldn't be able to take the loose herb with me.
Right.
Right. Now, my sweetheart, who comes from a family in which no man in the family has lived to the age of 60, and he is now nearly 70,
did have
a triple bypass.
Oh.
Not have a heart attack, because his C-reactive protein was very low. There was no inflammation, but he was having a hard time breathing. Three of his major coronary arteries were more than 80% blocked.
Ouch.
The doctors told him before the surgery that that meant that his heart had not been getting oxygen and had not been getting enough oxygen for a good long time, and that although he would feel better after the surgery, that it wouldn't be, you know, like back to zero because there would already have been damage to the heart.
Mm-hmm.
After the surgery, the surgeon came to him, told him he had done that operation over 4,000 times, and that he had never in his life seen a heart like my sweetheart's heart. He said there was not a single cell in it damaged. He could not explain it, but it was in the heart's healthiest heart he had ever held in his hand.
My goodness. And if Hawthorne,
what do you suppose my sweetheart takes every day?
I'm out Hawthorne, here talking about Hawthorne.
Hawthorne at night and motherwort in the morning.
Wow. Wow, very interesting. Cool.
Yeah. Now, motherwort is especially well-suited to women because we tend not to clog up our major coronary arteries the same way. We tend to fill in the capillary beds. It's a more diffuse kind of heart disease for us. And one of the things that motherwort does is to increase the capillary bed, so there's more capillaries there. And, of course, that's the answer to how it is that my sweetheart's heart was unharmed, was the capillary bed was so enlarged to his heart that his heart was able to get oxygen and nourishment even with that much blockage.
Wow.
So if the person has a feeling about motherwort, right, and says, ooh, that, you know, that sounds more like me than the Hawthorne, then often suggest for women that they start with one or the other, either Hawthorne or Motherwort. My sweetheart is taking both because he's obviously in a different category than you are, right?
Yeah, I hope so.
Comes from a family of men who dropped dead of heart attacks in their 50s.
Yeah.
That's not what we're looking at with you. We're looking at you generally had low blood pressure as you're getting older, which is very normal, but blood pressure is going to come up. And that's partly due to the slowing down of the heart's pumping action and partly due to a stiffness of the blood vessels and a lack of flexibility in those blood vessels.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your blood vessels should be in pretty good shape because, as you say, you do stay active.
Right.
I certainly lead a very active lifestyle, but I will tell you that when I got my Fitbit pedometer, that I realized that it was not as active as I had thought.
I know. I've slowed down the last couple of years a lot, actually.
And while there were bursts of activity, there was not the sustained activity that I needed. And with the help of my Fitbit, I've been able to make it a goal to walk 3 miles at a minimum every single day.
Wow.
And because I always have my Fitbit on me, and because I'm pretty easily influenced by numbers and don't like to fail my own goals, when I look at my Fitbit and I see that today I've only taken 5,820 steps and my goal is 6,000 steps, we know that Susan is going to take another 200 steps before the evening is out so that she can meet her personal goal, and that if she wishes to meet her personal goal of walking 3 miles, she's going to have to take another 1,200 steps. She's going to have to go outside and walk up and down the driveway 4 or 5 times to meet that goal. But I can take this out of my pocket right now and tell you exactly what my activity level has been. Today, I've walked 2.5 miles, I have burned 1,800 calories, I've gone up 6 flights of stairs, and I have walked 5,820 steps. I cannot tell you how wonderful my Fitbit is.
Wow, very interesting. I might have to try that.
Okay.
Hey, the Motherwort, did you say how much to take of that? I didn't write that part down.
My sweetheart takes a dropper full a day.
All right.
And what I often suggest for women for heart health is that you go ahead and start with a dropper full. You might actually find that you need less, but it's in the mint family. It's not a problematic plant. You would not want to make a tea or an infusion of it because the tea or infusion tastes very bitter. The tincture doesn't.
Okay.
And again, it's perfectly fine to put your tincture into hot liquids or mix it into something where you don't taste the alcohol.
All right, because I have done it, but I didn't know if I was destroying something in it by doing that, so that's good to know.
No, you are not at all destroying anything. And again, you know, it's an ounce of tincture. Even if you were to go hog wild and drink the whole thing at once, wouldn't really count, would it?
I don't even want to say. It's the mind sometimes. It's the mind.
It's the mind sometimes, but, you know, I've had so many alcoholics look at me and say, you know, I look at that tincture bottle and I think, I could drink the whole tincture bottle, and then I go, gag, that would be awful, yuck. And they say that actually, once they start having tinctures around, it's like, it really helps them not want to drink.
Right.
Because the idea of drinking the tincture is so off-putting that it allows them to feel off-put by the alcohol as well.
Yeah.
But I trust you. I trust your own sense of what you need to do to keep yourself healthy.
Want to hear something else?
Sure.
I had asthma all my life until about a year after I stopped getting my periods, and then my asthma is gone. And I'm blaming it on menopause, and that's one really awesome side effect, don't you think?
I think that's an incredible side effect of menopause, yes.
Anyhow, I've read a couple of your books, but they're packed away in a box in a storage bin, and it's really, I've been listening to you occasionally, and you have a soothing voice, and you're so smart. It's really enjoyable to listen to you. So thank you for your input.
You're welcome. Green blessings.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, do you think we have another?
I just looked at the clock. It's 8:54. We've got 6 minutes before Jennifer Orezio is calling.
Yes.
Jennifer specializes in helping people connect, and she's going to be on the show tonight at 9 o'clock. That's 6 minutes from now. Did you say we have another caller?
We do not have any more callers, but we have plenty of email questions if we want to squeeze one more in.
Let's fit one more question in, and Susan will have to be briefer in her answer to this question than she has been for any other question tonight.
Okay, so
all right.
It says, Dear Susan, is there an herbal ally I could work with to relieve tendonitis? Also, could you please include your recipe and instructions for making whole wheat bread in an upcoming easing? I have never baked bread before. Thank you so much.
You know, the funny thing about bread is that while you can write about it, you really need to be hands-on. If you've never made bread, you need to see somebody kneading bread. You need to understand what that motion is and how you do it. So maybe someday you'll come and hang out with me for a while, and we'll make some bread together, because while I could give you a recipe, it wouldn't necessarily work out for you unless you know how to do the magic of bread baking, which is the kneading. And tendons, ligaments are helped by comfrey. Comfrey leaf infusion is the way that I ensure that my tendons and my ligaments are strong and healthy. I take 1 ounce of dried comfrey leaf, and I put it in a quart jar, and then I fill that quart jar right up to the top with boiling water, put a tight lid on it, and let it steep overnight or for 4 hours. Then I strain that out and put it in the refrigerator, and I drink that when I'm working to really improve something that has been injured or something that is inflamed. Itis, it means inflammation. Then I don't hesitate to rebrew the comfrey. So I take the leaves from the first brewing of the comfrey, and I put them in a pot with 2 cups of cold water. So I started out by weighing out 1 ounce of dried comfrey, putting it into a quart jar, and filling that jar with a quart of boiling water. Now we've strained off that comfrey infusion, and we're reusing the herb. We're taking the herb and putting it in a saucepan, and putting 2 cups of cold water in with it, and then bringing it up to a boil. Once it comes to a boil, we're going to turn the fire off, put a lid on the pan, and let it sit for 4 to 6 hours, and then strain that rebrew. What we got from the first brew was the protein, the allantoin, the vitamins, the minerals, a lot of the real good stuff in the comfrey. And what we get in the second brew is an inert substance called mucilage. Kind of an odd name for it, because when I grew up, mucilage was glue, but this mucilage unglues things. Or maybe it's called glue because it puts broken things back together again. Whatever. It is a slippery, slimy substance that which you will see when you strain the second infusion, and you see how much more slippery it is than the first one. Some people say they just can't drink that second brew because it's so slippery, and they save the first brew and then mix them together so that it's not so slimy. You certainly can do that, or you can drink the two of them separately. I also find that this brew is far easier to drink if I heat it up, so that's another possibility in terms of using the comfrey. And many people are upset or cautious about using comfrey. I'm not. I have actually, in situations of injury, used quite a lot of comfrey, but let your own good wisdom be your guide. Anywhere from 2 cups of the comfrey infusion to 4 cups on a daily basis, and that repeated 2 to 4 days out of the week. So that would be anywhere from as little as we did 1 cup a day, 2 days out of the week, that would be only 2 cups. And if you did 4 cups a day, 4 days out of the week, that would be 16 cups. Anything within that range should be safe and helpful. And I bet we have Jennifer on the line now.
She is here. And
Jennifer Rezio specializes in helping people connect. She helps people connect to themselves, to each other, and to the divine. She has founded a new paradigm called Soul Language, which provides guidance for understanding our true nature and gives us tools for accessing our deeper levels of awareness. Jennifer's new book called, you're right, Soul Language, Consciously Connecting with Your Soul for Success, has just come out. Congratulations, Jennifer, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. Yay!
Yay! Yeah. So what is soul language?
Well, what we're doing is we're putting some words and some tangibility around something that's so not tangible. And so what it allows people to do is to form a deeper connection with their soul. So what soul language does is put some words around what you know deep down inside, and we each speak 3 languages of soul: your mission, how you feel that mission, and then your soulful personality. And by creating this conscious connection with yourself, you have a deeper connection with yourself, with others, and, of course, with the divine. And I'm sorry, but my cat is peeping this afternoon, so you might hear that in the background.
Okay.
And so that's what soul language is.
So that's what soul language is. It's the language. It's a language we all already speak?
Yes, each one of us speaks 3 out of 107 different languages. So you've chosen your own kind of special language this time around. And what it really just does is put some words to what you know deep down inside. So, for example, let's just say that your soul has innovation. Well, you could speak the language of the pioneer. And when I tell people, especially pioneers, that that's their soul language, there's this deep sense of relief because pioneers tend to be very innovative, very out in front, and they can often feel very alone. And so when they understand, hey, I've chosen this, hey, I can utilize this for all of its strength and sustainability, there's this deep sense of permission to really step into their power and be who they are.
I think I'm getting it. Now, tell me if I'm wrong here. Soul language is not one language, but 187 different languages.
It's 107 different languages. We each only speak
107 different languages.
Yeah.
And from those 107 different languages, we each have chosen 3.
That's correct.
And we've already made those choices.
You already made the choices before you decided to pop into body. And your selection doesn't change. It would be very confusing if you've made this choice and then suddenly midlife you decide that you want to do something else via your soul. It would be very confusing to keep trying to create a conscious connection with that and evolving. So while we were on the other side, wherever we go, when we're not in body, we sat at our big soul table and said, okay, what do we want to do this time? And what are we going to need? And that's how I believe the selection takes place.
And so your book, Soul Language, lays out all 107 languages.
Yes, it does. And although if you read the book, you can't really identify your own, everyone who purchased the book is entitled to a discovery session, which is my gift to you, where one of your languages will be identified. And I do that through the process of muscle testing or therapeutic kinesiology. I become the pendulum on your soul's behalf. But we've included the 107 different languages because what happens is you have your languages identified, and then you want your spouses identified, and then you want your kids identified, and then you want the people at work identified, because you start to be able to see all the patterns. And when you know who is around you and what languages they speak, you can take a lot of things not so personally. You can really foster the soulfulness out of your children. You can have more supportive relationships with your sacred partner. So we've included the 107 for that reason. Also because people will go through the book and go, okay, what resource do I need? Who can I attract? Oh, I want to attract an equalizer. Or, oh, I want to attract a graceful warrior. And then you can kind of do that call of intention out to the universe to attract that energy to support you and guide you and help you.
So your book, in a way, explicates all of the different languages, but none of us are capable of telling for ourselves what our own language is.
Not at this time. You need a practitioner, and that's why we do the discovery session. You know, in later, the next volume, we will. You know, there's this thing where people start to muscle test that they will ask a question over and over again until they get the answer they want. And it kind of fries the body's circuits. And so we really sat down, we, meaning me and my metaphysical team, and said, would this, if we put how to identify the languages in the book this time, would that support everyone? And the answer was no. So we worked it out so people can get what they need when they purchase the book as a gift. So that's why we chose not to do it this time around.
But there is a forthcoming book that will tell people how they can find out for themselves what their own soul language is.
Eventually there will be. You know, it took us a year and a half to edit this book because the information was divinely guided, you know. And when you kind of channel something, you want to keep the divine intention as close as you can. So it took us a year and a half to edit the work. And what people are telling me when they buy that book, that they can use it as just a tool of resource gathering. They can use it to open up and receive guidance. They can utilize it to understand, you know, even just one language in depth. And it becomes this really kind of guidebook in order to create their own success. You know, success needs structure. So that's what we set out to intend to do, and I think we were pretty successful with it.
But it's not a guidebook unless there's a guide. Is that what you're saying?
Well, there's a guidebook. There's a guide because, you know, all you have to do is arrange for a discovery session with me, and then you'll know one of your languages. So right off the bat, you have some tools that you can put into transformation. You know, if I never speak to that person again, you have enough kind of information to go with to transform your life in major ways.
Okay, so everybody wants to transform their lives?
Well, I think people want to
nobody has a soul language, which is, I am happy with things as they are?
Well, I think we're all whole and complete, and I think we're all in an evolutionary process. So I think transformation happens all the time. You know, there's
evolution is mostly about making mistakes and about extinctions. That's what evolution is about. I think maybe you're thinking somehow that there's a goal toward betterment.
Not at all. Absolutely, totally not. I believe everyone's
whole and evolution, these life could evolve so that they lose their home and lose their business and lose their job. That would be evolution. That's how evolution works, because evolution only can come into play when there are major stressors.
No. I believe that
that's not really what you don't really mean evolution.
I mean the soul evolves. the soul evolves, can evolve through spirit and joy, and it can evolve through
okay.
channeling
your
shadow.
Oh, okay. So we have a major philosophical difference here. So far as I'm concerned, the soul is whole and complete and is incapable of either change or evolution. Now, perhaps you don't mean by soul what I mean by soul. But
well,
by soul,
mean by
I mean
soul?
The enduring essence of all, which is
no, that's,
everything.
No, I would call that the
was, it is all 107 languages. It does not choose three.
Okay. You know, I believe that the oversoul is that pure essence, that consciousness of the divine or God or however you want to put it. You know, we are in human form, so there's going to be some evolution. We're here to kind of learn things and develop things and bring us closer to God. That's my belief system. And so that's what the paradigm is developed on. And it's really been supportive and really helpful for a lot of people. So, you know, I
you believe you're here to learn something, that this is some kind of school, then that this would be a good paradigm for you. I am absolutely convinced that this is not a school of any kind. We are not here to learn anything. We are here to become whole, and that is very different than learning, because learning implies good and bad, passing and failing, learning our lessons,
you know
not
what?
Learning our lessons.
I'm really sorry. I'm going to stop you because I'm really sorry, because I think I don't really understand. Like, you seem to be kind of coming at me in a weird way. I fundamentally believe we are whole and complete. I also understand that we have to remember that we're whole and complete. And so God, I believe, provides us with tools to remember that we are whole and complete. Soul language is one of those tools. If you don't agree with it, that's perfectly fine. And I totally respect your beliefs. And I want to collaborate with you here. But I also don't want to feel like what I'm talking about isn't in the highest good of all. So if, you know, if we don't see eye to eye, that's perfectly fine. But I do believe we are all whole and complete. In fact, that's what I tell people. And I also have the premise that if I believe I'm whole and complete, then everyone's whole and complete. You know, there are some people that just need, including myself, additional tools to connect, remember, and have that deep conversation with their soul to remember and become closer to the divine.
Sounds good to me.
Brilliant.
What are some myths about spirituality that you've encountered?
I think one of the myths of spirituality is that, you know, often people believe that they want to kind of rule out ego, that they want to stamp it, that they want to, you know, wrestle it to the ground. And I think ego is supportive. I think, you know, it's part of the divine. It's part of who you are. There's a shadow side, and there's a really good side. And with egos action-oriented, without ego, we wouldn't get off the couch. And so I think there's this kind of myth of trying to wrestle ego to the ground instead of loving ego. I think another spiritual myth, or you know, maybe a blind spot, is I've worked on that, I've done that. You know, every time in my life where I said, oh, I've worked on that, I've done that, or, you know, I get to explore that in a deeper way to bring me closer to God. So I think that's another spiritual myth. And I think another one is that, you know, there are gurus and there's experts and that somebody knows something better than someone else. You know, I've been taught profound spirituality from an 8-year-old, and I've been taught profound spirituality from, you know, someone who doesn't know anything about spirituality. I think that the more I know, the more I don't know. And I think that spirituality gets to be approached with a deep sense of being humble. So those are some of the myths that I've encountered.
That we should get rid of the ego, you have found to be a myth, and that the ego is actually a motivating force for us.
It's a supportive force, yeah.
Yeah, that you have found that for yourself, that you sometimes find yourself saying, oh, I don't have to pay attention to that because I've already done that? That's a myth.
I've said that. I think it's a spiritual blind spot. I've heard people say that. You know, oh, I've worked on that. Oh, I've done that. You know, I should be over this. I should be past this. And I think that, you know, everything is just brings us closer to the divine or gives us the perception that we're farther away or separate.
It is exactly that myth that makes me believe that the soul is not here to evolve, that we are here to experience, and we are given opportunities again and again to experience, not so we get it better, not so we pass the grade, but simply because we're here to experience.
I think that you're under the impression that I'm very black and white and that I have a goal in mind with my journey. I don't. I just want to be closer to God. And I think that we make choices every day to decide in this body, with this essence in my body, if I'm going to be in the perception that I'm closer to God or farther away. And I might call that evolution. You might call that something else. We might totally disagree with that. But I really, you know, one of my soul languages is called Teacher of Integrity. So that main kind of sustainability of that language is helping people bring themselves deeper into this consciousness of love. You know, we often hear, you know, there's conditional love and unconditional love. There's no such thing as conditional love. If you're not in the consciousness of love, you're in some other consciousness, perfectly fine. But, you know, love is this forgiving, non-judgmental, is just being this closeness, this state that you cannot even describe at times. I really do believe that we're all whole and complete. I think we just have to keep remembering.
Yes. And then the last myth that you said was which one?
There was
a third one after ego, and I've done that.
It slipped out of my head.
Oh, well, maybe we'll get back to it.
Yeah, it will circle back.
Yeah. What's your favorite tool that you use for being closer to God?
I use a bunch of tools because I'm one of those people that likes to shake it up. And I find if I use the same tool time and time again, I can get complacent. My one for the last year, besides talking to my soul, which is my go-to tool all the time, is singing. I found that in taking singing lessons and actually using my voice in that way, something has totally shifted and something has released in such a profound way that when I sing, I instantly feel so connected and so loved and so supported. And so that's been my major kind of go-to practice if I'm feeling a little icky or a little out of alignment, that I turn on my iPad, I turn on my iPod, and I start to sing. And there's an instant settling within me.
Anything? You can sing anything?
Yeah. You know,
rap
I mean,
music?
I never prefer rap music, but I do love a good Eminem once in a while. You know, I think that different things have different vibrations. My favorite thing to sing, of course, is, you know, any kind of spiritual music, anything from, you know, good old hymns to something more contemporary. There's a great song by Ma Muse called Hallelujah, which is just so glorious. The words are just so amazing. It's about the ever-flowing river inside of us. And so I go through stages where I listen to a song time and time again, then I switch. So, yeah, basically I can sing everything, you know. It's about the vibration. It's about the connection. It's about the words. you know, some rap songs have really great words. Might not be my style, but yeah, opening up and singing feels great to me. So doesn't really matter most.
So you sing along. You're not just listening. You're actually vocalizing yourself.
I'm actually vocalizing, yes. And now I've actually taken singing lessons where I'm actually singing, in class, in front of people, which is very, it shakes up a lot of stuff. And especially since there's a lot of talented people in the class, one of the women in the class opened up for the Indigo Girls. And so even putting yourself out on stage, you're very seen in that sense. And so I think it opens up a whole new level of being really comfortable being seen, being connected like that.
And did you come to the singing because of something that your person you applied to told you about your soul's language? Because you can't tell for yourself, right?
No, I actually created the paradigm of soul language.
Oh, so you can tell for yourself. It's just couldn't tell for myself.
And I train practitioners to do it as well. I started the singing lessons because at the end of the day of working with clients, I was losing my voice. And so I approached this amazing woman and said, "I at the end of the day, I don't have a voice, and I want to not lose my voice." And she said, "Okay, we'll do some breathing." And by the third lesson, I realized, oh, my God, I just want to sing and knit. Like, it was so profound that something that I just didn't know was there. You know, I think that because I do my sacred practice, that sometimes, you know, things just are tricky. And I don't see, you know, where to stretch myself because I'm in the sacred practice all the time. And I think singing became this new way of approaching God that I hadn't thought of before or had an experience. So that's why I approached the singing lesson. You know, I was just led. The beginning
How
of the
beautiful.
Year, each year, I... Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very,
and
you know...
Certainly
okay,
my
I'm
mentors
sorry.
My mentors very much agree with you. As a matter of fact, I have been instructed by my mentors that I'm not allowed to teach anyone who hasn't just been singing.
Very fun. Very
yep.
fun.
And, well, you would think, except, you know, often I have to exhort people and say to them, it's not a contest, you're not on TV, all you have to do is sing. And it's very interesting and almost alarming how many people are afraid to sing.
It's very... you're very exposed. You know, it's using that divine voice in a way that we don't use it every day. And a lot of stuff happens. I mean, you know, during class I watch trained professionals go through the same angst that I do when I'm up there. And it really allows me to have such a deeper level of compassion because for myself and for them. Because, wow, we are all one. We are all in the same boat. And, you know, to kind of move through that and really support people and hold that space that they can do it and stretch themselves and try something new. It is probably one of the scariest things I've ever done. And I've done a lot of scary things. and I really didn't think it was going to be that scary, you know. But every week there's a triumph, you know. Like last week I actually used the mic before I wouldn't even look at the mic. I was like, no, that thing scares me. But, you know, this week I used the mic, so that was really funny. And it's funny how the divine provides because the day before my class, I was speaking at an event, and the woman hosting the event, who's a very good friend of mine, says, "Okay, so what do you want? Do you want the head mic or the handheld mic?" And I was like, "Oh, no, Chris, I don't want a mic." And she's like, "We have to have a mic because we're recording it, so what do you want?" And I was like, "Oh, give me the handheld because that's what we're going to have to use in singing." And so I did my spiel, and I get down, and the audio guy goes, "You're great with the mic." And I was like, "What?" That's the first time I've ever been held a mic. And he's like, "Really?" I was like, "Yeah." And it was just, you know, when you allow yourself to be in that zone, there's so many things that just come naturally that you can move past the fear.
How wonderful. That is great. Now, I find that a lot of times people have some kind of limiting thing that they do or limiting belief that they hold or limiting kind of, you know, way that they've, say, boxed themselves into a corner. Do you find that? And does soul language help?
Well, and I want to be very clear. Soul language is always growing and changing, and in no way do we want to ever put anybody in a box. That's not the premise. That's not the intention. There's always some sort of limitation that we come against, and again, I think that's a choice, so you can choose something different for yourself. But, yeah, you know, I mean, and I find as we grow, you know, on our path here, and we've been on the path for a while, it gets a little sneakier to see those limiting beliefs. I remember several years ago, I was working on the not enough limiting belief, not enough time, not enough money, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting at a dinner table with my family, my mom, my aunt, and my uncle, and I'm stressing over the bread. There's not going to be enough bread for everyone. And we're in a restaurant. All you have to do is ask for more bread. Like, and I really had this keen sense of awareness, like, oh, my God, how sneaky is that? Not enough. And, you know, I think all limiting beliefs come down to one thing, and that's not feeling safe, or you're afraid that you won't be safe. So when all else fails, I pray or activate or affirm safety in my body to move through that limiting belief.
That's very important, isn't it, that we
mm-hmm.
give ourselves that safety?
Yeah.
That we find how we can actually offer that safety. Well, it's hard for me to believe, but we have come to the last minute of our show.
Wow,
and so
very exciting.
I always like to give my guest the very last minute, and I will ask you in a moment to, you know, give the listeners something that they can really take to their dreams, that they can take home. But before then, I want to tell people that you can find Jennifer and Soul Language at www.knowsoulslanguage.net. And that website is know, as in being wise, souls language. No, soulslanguage.net. And there you can find out about Jennifer Rezio. You can find out about her book, Soul Language, Consciously Connecting with Your Soul for Success. And you can probably find out how to get that help that you will need to find out what your one of your choices of soul language is. Is there any other way that people should get in touch with you, or is that the best way?
You know, my phone number is on the website under the contact, and you can always feel free to actually pick up the phone and call me. I do pick up my own phone, and I'm very accessible. And so feel free to reach
out. Do you want your phone number given out?
Sure.
Is that what you're saying?
It's 862-368-5877. Just remember, I'm on Eastern time. I have been known to get a call at 2 o'clock and pick it up. You'll get my sleepy voice, but.
Okay, here's your last minute. What do you want to leave us thinking about, Jennifer?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for our time together today. And I want everyone just to take a deep breath and ask divine intelligence, the divine and their body, to fill their body with the knowing and the expression that they are safe, that they are loved, and that they are supported.
And thank you all listeners for joining me, Susan Weed, here with Jennifer Rezzio, the author of Soul Language, as we once again reweave the healing cloak of the ancients. Green blessings, everyone, until we meet again here at Women's Radio or at my blog talk show.